For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics. Along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill, and sitting in for Ryan Kiesel is Norman Democratic Representative Emily Virgin. Welcome to both of you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Great to have Emily here.
Thank you.
This week has been marked with scandal in the Republican Party, and we start with Woodward Senator Bryce Marlatt, who abruptly resigned his seat earlier this week after getting booked into the Oklahoma County Jail for accusations of sexual battery against an Uber driver while Marlatt was allegedly drunk. Neva, your thoughts on this news?
Well, more bad news. And I mean, when you see these headlines, I saw one in the Washington Post this week that said four sex scandals linked to GOP at Oklahoma County in 2017. I mean, those kind of headlines, they're bad enough at home, but then when they make national news, it just compounds it. So clearly, I mean, this is one of those incidents that there was a lot of scuttle, a lot of conversation going on now for several weeks about what would happen, if anything. So it's regrettable, and I think what we immediately see once a resignation comes is within 24 hours we have folks stepping up saying they're going to run in a special election, and we see that already with Representative Casey Murdoch, who announced 24 hours after the resignation that he, in fact, would make the leap or attempt to run in this special election for the seat.
Representative Virgin.
Yeah, I mean, I think Neva brings up a great point. Aside from you know, there being a victim in this case, and it's a very unfortunate situation, but that we are going to have yet another special election, and the election board is having trouble affording these special elections. We had to increase their appropriation last session because of all the special elections that we've had. So, you know, I think it's something to think about that maybe if you have to resign in a situation like this, then you would be responsible for part of the special election cost or something to that effect, because we're getting to the point where the election board simply cannot afford these.
And certainly Senator Kyle Loveless now paid
right.
for his.
Right.
So is there some way that the election board can say, now, that was a little different case,
right.
but is there some way that the election board can say, hey, you need to pay for some of this?
Well, clearly, I think lawmakers are having to take a look at this exactly for what Representative Virgin said. I mean, it's an appropriations issue now on top of all of the other legal issues and other issues. And certainly from a political standpoint, the public is getting, I think, very tired of seeing these headlines.
Absolutely.
And I think we're seeing reaction to that. I think as I said, it's the compounded effect of bad behavior, bad actions, and the results that are really making it very difficult for good lawmakers to be able to fade the heat back in their districts. Because I'm certain, as any lawmaker is back at any event or just on the doors or wherever they happen to be, they're hearing this from their constituents,
yeah.
and they're confused and they're mad and they want to see some change. So I think it sets up, unfortunately, as we talk about special session, next session, on down the road, the elections next year, it we'll see if this continues to have a really negative impact on what happens at the polls.
Another scandal is emerging. It's not involving an actual elected official, but in the Fallon administration, former aide Travis Brower, prosecutors are charging Brower with evidence tampering over allegations he took photos of women's skirt at a committee meeting. Neva Fallon herself is listed as a possible witness for the prosecution here.
Again, I mean, it's the continued storyline that we're talking about. I mean, this is another incident that however this unfolds, clearly it was serious enough that charges were filed. And so I think it's regrettable that we're seeing this just snowball effect, but they all need to be obviously addressed from a legal standpoint, and certainly it will be interesting to see what the unintended consequences perhaps at the Capitol are from incidents like this.
Representative, this isn't an actual elected official, but does this have sort of a black eye on the Fallon administration?
I think this is more indicative of the culture at the Capitol.
Okay.
And it's a really, it's an unfortunate situation, of course, again, because there is a victim here. But I think many, many people at the Capitol probably aren't surprised at things like this happening at the Capitol. And I think there needs to be a huge change. There needs to be training. There needs to be a lot of things, because we started this last session with a scandal, mm-hmm. with a sexual harassment scandal. And it's just continued since then. And at that point, we discovered there really aren't any policies in place in terms of training elected officials or maybe even staff in terms of what's appropriate and what's not. And I think, you know, combined with it being a late night during this meeting and there was probably alcohol involved, it's just, it's completely inappropriate. And I think that it needs to, it's indicative, like I said, of the culture at the Capitol, but it tells us that we need to do something. We need to act to make sure that not only our elected officials and staff, not only do they feel comfortable, but that visitors at the Capitol feel comfortable coming to the Capitol, because this was a citizen coming to the Capitol to express her feelings on the issues, and this is what happened to her.
Yeah, this seems kind of strange. In the private sector, if sexual harassment of one of the employees had come up, you'd have everybody watching videos and taking trainings, but this doesn't seem to be going on at the Capitol at all.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, my understanding is that there has been in recent years some training and some conversation about these types of issues, but clearly there needs to be more. And I think I think what is being said is absolutely accurate. You have to clean up your own house. I mean, you have to clean up whether it's in the private sector or in the public sector. But there's a higher threshold when we're talking about elected officials, their staffs. I mean, everyone inside that building are doing the people's business, and so they have to recognize that there is going to be a higher level of scrutiny. And I think that out of this, if things can be put in place and there can be this bipartisan kind of changing of the culture and the mindset there, that this is not behavior that's going to be accepted. It's not going to be swept under the rug. It's not going to be taken care of, you know, without anyone hopefully hearing about it, which has kind of been some of what's gone on through the years, as we all know. That's over, and business has to change. And I think these incidents so close together may do well to stem the tide of this bad behavior and hopefully at least put people on notice that you're going to be on your own and we're not going to tolerate it for any length of period at all.
Yeah, I do think that that you bring up a good point that these types of behaviors have probably always existed at the Capitol. They certainly have in the 7 years that I've been there. But what has changed is that people aren't they don't seem to be getting away with it anymore. And I think that's, you know, credit goes to the district attorneys and those law enforcement officials who are investigating this. But like Neva said, these things aren't being swept under the rug anymore. And that is at least heartening. Hopefully we get to a day where they don't happen anymore.
Right. Well, and I think it's important to point out that this is not a partisan issue. I mean, this goes across, you know, goes across party lines. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think we need to see a definite systemic change in how things are attended to when these things come up. And we're in an age where with cell phones and smartphones and this instant ability to get something out there, an allegation, a photograph, whatever it happens to be, through social media and all of the various forms that are out there. I mean, it makes it much more instant and much more an opportunity for the public to kind of weigh in outside the scope of just these individuals inside the Capitol.
Absolutely.
A special election in Norman on Tuesday saw the Democrats take another seat away from the Republicans. Public school teacher Jacob Rosecrans soundly defeated his GOP opponent, Norman businessman Darren Chambers. Representative Virgin, this is in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
What happened here?
Well, a few things happened. Number one, Jacob Rosecrans worked his tail off. And he got out there and knocked the doors and talked to the voters. And so in any election, I think if you have one side outworking the other, you can overcome the partisan registration or various things like that. So I think that was the number one thing that caused Jacob to win, because he worked very, very hard. Another thing is he had run before. Right. He ran against the incumbent Scott Martin in 2016. So in November he was on the ballot. He already had some name recognition, and so that definitely helped him. But I think this also sends a message that voters, at least in Norman, and I think in some other places that we've seen with special elections and Democrats winning them, that voters are tired of what's going on at the Capitol. They want to change. They aren't happy, especially with education, because that was the number one issue, I think, in this race. They aren't happy with the state of education funding, and they don't like things like vouchers in public schools and things that will take away money from public schools.
Neva, as you've always mentioned, the politics are always local. And this
Absolutely.
Is one of those issues.
Well, and it was interesting. A couple of things about the race. I mean, you had a 21% turnout. I mean, which for a special election, when we've seen some of these races, much lower turnout. It spoke to the fact that you had, I think, campaigns on both sides that were running very high energy, mm-hmm. very intense campaigns, both on the ground, both on the doors. And it was a reversal for the Democrat. I mean, having lost every precinct to Scott Martin in the last election, turning around and winning every precinct but one, and that right. one was such a small one with, I think, 8 out of 27 votes or something like that that he got in that precinct. It was a complete reversal. What does it say? I mean, I think there are a lot of things about specials that are very different from general
right.
elections.
Right.
And next year, when he runs as an incumbent and has to go back on the doors, has to go back with a record, has to go back with votes, I mean, then the voters will have to take another look. And so I think Scott Martin had an extraordinary career for 11 years as the state representative. He was someone that, when you talk about education, he was a Republican that clearly had a good record and a good reputation on that issue in Norman, which, being a community that both on common ed and higher ed is a very central focus of where the voters have always been, nothing new. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing about these last three specials, when you look at it, and the fact that they've been flipped to the Democrat side, all of them had districts that basically started with about 40% Democrat voting blocks. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at districts that are, you know, bordering on being very competitive, and you've just got that swing of, you know, 10% plus in a special, if you can get the messaging and you can get the ground game going, then all of a sudden you're in a whole new world. And frankly, this is almost what we saw years ago when Republicans started to make gains in special elections yeah. in the early 1980s the very same way. I mean, this is the pendulum swinging, you know, back and forth. And I think in this instance, the Democrats now have energy, they have momentum, they have an ability with these upcoming specials. There's still four now that'll be that we'll see this year. I mean, it makes every single one of them a competitive place where no one should think that they have any certainty of what the outcome will be.
Are the Democrats taking note on what they're winning? Now, granted, two of the other ones were on sex scandals, so it's a
right,
little bit.
Right.
It's a lot.
This one was different.
Yeah, this was a favorite. I mean, Scott Martin was a great representative. I enjoyed being around him. He's great for the media. He was always available. But this one was a little bit, I probably would say, even harder because there was no scandal to say this is what the Republicans are doing. But are Democrats taking mm-hmm. note of the ground game that the winners of these parties these elections seem to be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that we've always known. It's not rocket science. It's not something new that if you get out on the ground and you knock the doors, you have a much better shot at winning and you can overcome a 10-point difference. But finding those candidates who are willing to knock the doors is the hard part, as Neva knows better than anyone. And that's I think what we have to focus on going forward is finding those candidates who are willing to put in the work. But I think another interesting aspect, though, of this race was that this doesn't just encompass part of Norman. It also has the community of Noble, a community that is traditionally pretty conservative. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues there was that they've gone to a four-day school week. And Jacob, being a teacher, could speak to that issue. And so that was really shocking to me. I did not expect Jacob to win Noble, but he did.
Very interesting. And I think the other thing, when you look at that district, you have about 4,000 independents and libertarians in that particular House seat. And I think that's a significant factor that if we were able to really extract out how the voting broke out by, you know, by Republican, Democrat, Independent. Was that a factor? Because clearly those folks, I mean, oftentimes are kind of left in special elections kind of out of the equation, and people don't, they concentrate on their base. I mean, Republicans or Democrats concentrate on their highly likely voter base, and then they try to get the folks that are kind of up for grabs. And I wonder in this instance, does this point to something that, and I think we've talked about this in the past few years, that with this growing number of independents in Oklahoma, as we see statewide elections as well as these local elections, will there be more targeting or more focused effort to get them into the picture? And certainly from a Democrat standpoint, mm-hmm. when they can vote in those primaries, I mean, mm-hmm. it kind of changes the whole dynamic. And I think this is part of what maybe we're not totally seeing how that landscape's going to really change the voter, you know, the voter profile overall.
But we do know it's going to change over the next few years. Another flipped seat came in the Oklahoma County Sheriff's Office, where Republican P.D. Taylor defeated two opponents to take the seat held by Democratic Sheriff John Wetzel, who resigned earlier this year. Oklahoma County voters haven't put a Republican in the sheriff's office since the 1920s. Neva, how big a deal is this?
Well, it's a huge deal, and I think certainly P.D. Taylor was in a position to have the advantage of what was perceived incumbency mm-hmm. as the acting sheriff. And I think that here's someone who is a career law enforcement person, someone who was well-known across the board in not only law enforcement circles, but certainly through the course of this campaign. I mean, his record came out. And so he was able to stem the tide of the negative publicity on all that's gone on at the jail, all of the problems that are still facing him now as sheriff with what needs to happen to correct a lot of things. And I think we saw the day after the election, I mean, he pretty well took the bull by the horn, so to speak, and told his folks, this is a new day. We're going to change the culture here. We're going to do things different. I am the sheriff now, and I intend to see some real results. So I think Republicans and Democrats across the board in that election had an opportunity to say what they wanted in the next sheriff, and P.D. Taylor got the opportunity to be that person. I think the 50-50 split, when you look at the Democrat and the Independent, clearly they kind of worked at odds with each other, because you had kind of the anti-vote kind of splitting between the two of those folks with really non-campaigns. I mean, they didn't have money, they didn't have a ground game to speak of, and so all of those advantages certainly were on the Taylor side of the board in the special.
And he's got some work to do, though, in the 3 years and 3 months before his reelection.
Yeah, I mean, this one was from an outsider, someone who's you know, from Cleveland County. Mm-hmm. It was shocking to see that P.D. Taylor won, to me. But then you look at the things that Neva points out, the money and the anti-vote being split between two candidates who didn't really have a campaign. But to voters outside of Oklahoma County, it's pretty baffling, because we read about all of the problems at the Oklahoma County Jail, and then you think, well, you put a guy in charge of the jail who's been there that whole time. But I think P.D. Taylor did do a good job of distancing himself from the previous administration, and so voters, I think, have the confidence in him to change direction. But I think this brings up another issue that it's strange to me that we elect county offices on a partisan basis. And so when we talk about this flipping from Democrat to Republican, it doesn't seem to fit in the conversation with all of the other races that we're talking about, because it doesn't seem like a position or a race that should be partisan.
There's actually been some legislation
Absolutely.
The past couple of
Right.
years to try and change that, but it just
Right.
seems to go nowhere.
Right. You know, the party who's in charge doesn't really want that, doesn't really want that legislation passed.
And I think
that's normal.
It's normal. I think we've talked about. I mean, if the roles were reversed
right,
and Democrats
right,
were in that
right.
were in that position, they would be the ones not wanting to see that change. So I think that does swing. It's interesting with P.D. Taylor. Another thing that I think will be fascinating to watch is that the county commissioners are talking about creating this jail trust of basically putting the sheriff as just one vote on this on this trust and moving this direction to kind of take control of the jail. P.D. Taylor has said that he opposes this. Now, how vigorous he will make this an effort on his part to kind of go to the public and take a take the opportunity to kind of make his case and see if he can stem that effort on the part of the commissioners. I think that will be his first real kind of political test at the courthouse, so to speak, to see whether he is really willing to kind of roll up his sleeves and tangle with these folks. And I think that'll be fascinating. But we're seeing these kind of issues with sheriffs and races and controversy in courthouses and virtually, unfortunately, in almost all 77 counties.
Yeah.
Cleveland County, I mean, we have an embattled sheriff. We have an audit that's just come out. A lot of controversy, lawsuits flying back and forth. I mean, it's regrettable, and I think it's, again, it is this composite effect on the voters of, you know, can anyone tell us anything good you're doing? I mean, that's almost becoming the question, and I think the challenge for the lawmakers, and it's nothing that I haven't said before, is that we need people like the Emily Virgins and people on the Democrat side and the Republican side to figure out a way to build a more bipartisan tone in the legislature and to find a way to do what the people really want to see. I mean, and, you know, frankly, if we can see Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi go to the White House and eat Chinese food this week with with Donald Trump, I mean,
anything
can happen. So I hold that out as the hope for all of us that we can see in this upcoming session maybe some real positive things happen.
And I do want to get to that. Preparations are taking place for a special session as Capitol staff and elected officials are clearing their schedule for a possible return on September 25th. Lawmakers have to find a way to fix a $215 million hole created when the state Supreme Court declared a $1.50 per pack cigarette fee unconstitutional. Representative Virgin, you are on the House Appropriations and Budget Committee. Are there talks already underway on how to fix this?
There are. Unfortunately, they haven't gone very far. Our minority leader, Scott Inman, had some very productive conversations with the governor's office. We thought we were getting somewhere with a sort of a grand bargain because we have made it very clear that we don't think the cigarette tax is the only solution. We think that's part of an overall package. And so we thought that we were getting somewhere with the governor's office and probably the Senate Republicans also. But the House Republicans have not really wanted to come to the table. They haven't shown any willingness to compromise, at least from our position. And so we're kind of in the same situation as we were when we started the last regular session, where, you know, the Democrats have given a plan. The governor has given a plan. We're still waiting to see what happens with the House Republicans. As I'm sure you saw, the new Appropriations Chair, Kevin Wallace, released a plan that had the cigarette tax, and then it had some tribal gaming and tribal vehicle registration aspects to it. Those tribal aspects don't bring in the revenue that we really need to fix this problem. And we saw that the tribal gaming aspect was very problematic for Senate Republicans last session. And so to throw that out again doesn't seem like a genuine attempt to put forth a plan.
Neva?
Well, I think we're at an interesting place where the governor basically sent out a save the date. I mean, we haven't even seen the official call, which I assume has to happen today or Monday.
Right.
I mean,
and
that was 10 days ago.
Exactly.
So,
right.
I mean, you know, and I think part of that is the struggle with what do you put in the call specifically in terms of how it's going to be approached. But the bottom line, I think, again, from a public perception standpoint, less from the give and take and the wrangling that goes on with the lawmakers having to struggle through this process, is I think there will be no appetite on the part of the public to see the lawmakers go in special session, drag it on, not get any results and have this just intractable position that basically is a reset from what you said, Representative Virgin. I mean, where you've got this situation where it is just a remix of what has gone on before. And I think people in the special I think there really is a legitimate expectation that you come in, you deal with the immediate issue, you go home, and you come back in February and start it all over again in terms of dealing with the bigger picture and the bigger issues. So, and that's always with the backdrop, like we talk about, of an election year looming for everyone. And clearly, a lot of folks out there, if everything is going to be predicated on how this is going to affect my election, then we've got a whole lot of folks up there that are going to be in a very difficult position of ever making good decisions. And right. I think it's going to take political courage that's unprecedented, and I hope that we can see it on both sides, this give and take. Right. And if that takes going outside the scope of leadership on both sides to get it done, then that may be where we're at, where we see some real bipartisan unity develop, where folks say, look, I mean, you know, if you all can't get in the room and make a deal and strike a grand bargain, as you say, Emily, then let's find a way to do something that the folks back home in our districts expect us to get done.
Yeah, and it's going to be, they're obviously not going to want to go in and spend several days, because every day they go in there, it's several thousands of dollars.
30,000, I think.
Yeah, right. So I'm guessing they're going to want to have a deal first. So what do you think are the likelihood that it's going to be September 25th, or do you think it's just going to be pushed back?
I think it's going to be September 25th. From what I've heard, the governor should send out the call probably today, mm-hmm. Thursday. And we've heard that also she may put forth her own revenue plan, which I sincerely hope that she does, because we need some leadership from the executive branch, especially given her role in a special session. I'm fearful that we will come in and essentially do nothing, yeah. which would be awful. We wouldn't fix the problem, and we would essentially be kicking the can down the road once again to hopefully get something done in February. But I think, as Neva said, the voters have zero appetite for us to come in and do nothing once again.
And doing nothing next session would be even harder because it's an election year.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So I think when you see, you're right, House Republicans and Senate Republicans in the majority clearly cannot seem to come to any right. kind of middle ground on where they will have the give and take. I mean, Senate Republicans have been in three times since the Supreme Court ruling. They basically have said that their appetite is to move forward with the $1.50 cigarette tax increase. I mean, that's what the pro tem has, President pro tem has said publicly. And you're right. I mean, we hear all of these different versions on the House side of what, you know, what might be able to garner enough votes to get the job done on their end of it. But at some point, I mean, all of these meetings have to actually transact some results
amount
and some
something.
Business. That's right. And I think we've talked about the other thing is the critical kind of timing piece to this is if they come in September 25th, they have to leave October 13th when the lights go out. We've talked about that the Capitol is going to be shut down for a week. That's already been longstanding in terms of this ongoing construction project. So if they have to recess and then come back, I mean, and this drags into, you know, another month and we see, again, no results in this impasse, that's the worst possible scenario
right.
That we could ever hope for.
Well, thank you very much for both for showing up.
Yeah,
thank
it's a
you.
Pleasure. It's fun to have you here,
yes.
Emily.
Yes. Likewise. Thank you.
Representative Virgin and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of KOSU, its staff, or management.